You're listening to the Mets Blog Q&A Cast, presented by Citi, your podcast for one-on-one Mets conversations.
What's up, Mets fans? I'm Matt Cerrone. Thanks for listening to the Mets Blog Q&A Cast, presented by Citi. To kick off the 2016 Mets season, Citi has wrapped a limited number amount of Mets-themed Citi Bites. So when you spot one, snap a picture and share it on Twitter or Instagram using the hashtag CityPerkSweepstakes to enter for a chance to win great prizes like throwing out the first pitch at a Mets game. For official rules, prizes, and details, visit Mets.com/CityPerkSweepstakes. Today I'm talking with comedian and big-time Mets fan Steve Hofstetter. You can download his free album at his website, SteveHofstetter.com. He's going to be at the Greenwich Village Comedy Club and Broadway Comedy Club on May 6th and 7th, so check out his site for details. He's funny, he's smart. He was recently on MLB Now talking about the Mets. He's a West Coast guy where the Mets are off going to this week, so wanted to get him on here early in the season, see what he thinks of the current state of the team. But real quick, one more reminder before we get into the show. If you haven't listened yet, check out our Mostly Mets podcast with Toby Hyde and Rob Brender. They do a really awesome job. They do a deep dive into Matt Harvey's struggles, which obviously is a big topic of conversation right now. It's a great show, so check it out. In fact, we've made it easier for you to listen to all of SNY.TV's original podcasts, which you can find and subscribe to by hitting up SNY.TV Audio Network on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And with that, here's my talk with comedian and Mets fan, Steve Hofstetter. So let's talk a little Mets. You're a big Mets fan.
Yeah.
You're on MLB Network recently. Tell me what you think of the current team and, you know, how I think really what I'm really interested in whenever I'm talking to Mets fans is how are you handling watching a team that's actually pretty good from the get-go, which is not something we're accustomed to. I mean, what do you make of that, and how are you handling that when you're watching these games, going into them kind of expecting to win?
I love this team so much. It's pretty incredible, the idea that Matt Harvey is the only one on the team with an ERA above 3.
Yeah.
It's amazing. They're over the offseason. This is the best offseason I can ever remember. Like, every hole was plugged perfectly. There was bench depth. There was bullpen help. There was a power bat, which was, you know, re-signing Cespedes. The upgrade from Murphy to Walker was incredible. Who knew it was going to be this incredible? It was everything we possibly needed. And, you know, our guardian angel, Michael Kadire, retiring and handing enough money to sign Cespedes. I mean, it was amazing. And so, coming in, everything looked wonderful. Now, not everything is going to go wonderful, and you have to remember that. And that's true with every team. The flat hitting from the first week was very scary, but you just have to, you know, you got to believe, as they say, and, you know, and know that it's eventually going to even out, and boy, did it. So I think it's just, it's exciting. I'm not someone who... Some people look at the Mets and they see a franchise that's filled with futility, and I don't. I see tremendous highs and tremendous lows. I see a roller coaster, and right now we're on the exciting part of the roller coaster.
It is pretty incredible when you go back to the offseason. I'm always struck by the day when it looked like there was a chance, and I don't know how legit it was in hindsight, but there was the perceived chance that Cespedes might go to the Nationals. And people were losing their minds. I actually was ready to quit Twitter at that point. It was just, it was brutal.
Yeah.
And then within 24 hours, he's on the Mets. Everything's great. And I've never seen, seriously, in doing what I do and doing the blog for 12 years, I can't remember a time where things were as quickly peaceful and so calm. And everybody was just, oh, this is great. It was a great offseason. No problems. Every hole is filled. You know, if you ask, you know, well, where could they upgrade? No one really said anything. It was pretty remarkable. I, honest and truthfully, even going back to like 06, 07, 08, never was the case. That's where we are now. And it's just remarkable to me that that's kind of where we are. I'm not used to that as a Mets fan. You know, and it's actually kind of remarkable. I think it's kind of a cool experience and kind of fun to live that. Now, at the same time, the Nationals are playing really great. Also, it would have been nice if they got off to a rough start, but they're hot. They're playing good, thanks in kind of part to Daniel Murphy. I hate to say that, but that's fine.
Yeah.
You know, and so well, here we are.
Come back.
Yeah, no, it's true. And so, like, here we are. Do you have any regrets when you see Murph going? How did you kind of feel about that situation and him leaving the team? Or did it matter just because Neil Walker has been so good so far?
I was happy to see him leave. I was happy to see him leave before we got Walker. Because, I mean, I believe, you know, Dilson might be the future, which is going to be so sad because, oh, no one wants to see Walker leave right now. But, you know, when even before that Walker trade, fact of the matter is people liked Murphy because of longevity. He had been on the team the second longest, second or right. And so people just got used to him being there. But I'm not someone who can just be like, hey, remember those 8 really good things? But what about the garbage? What about the bonehead errors? What about the homophobia? I mean, I really didn't like that. And, you know, and it was one of those things that actually when Murphy was the postseason hero, I was watching being like, oh, come on, anyone but him, please, anyone but him. And because I didn't want to see this fan base falling in love with him. And so when he left, I was like, that's okay. I was perfectly fine to see him leave.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'm with you on, I mean, I don't agree with his, you know, position on those issues, but at this, you know, I try to, it's hard as a writer of the side, I try to separate, you know, the real world of these guys versus what they do on the field. And on the field, you know, at the same time, you want to see them hot, right, in the playoffs and carry this team. If they won a World Series, you'd be looking at it one way versus another. And it's always kind of a tricky thing when you have to separate player morals. Well, that's interesting. So tell me about that. How do you, so had they won the World Series and Murphy was like, you know, he continued that hot streak and they won a World Series, would you have given it back?
No, I mean, you can't give it back, and I still would have been happy. One player cannot win a World Series for a team. The fact of the matter is,
the way he was hitting, he might have.
No, I mean, he was a huge contributor, but Syndergaard, Granderson, and I mean, and Conforto, who, by the way, I feel so vindicated because from like 2 weeks after he got called up, I was saying he is going to be the reason why they're there. And he is going to grow to become the next David Wright. And I had the opportunity to tell that to Michael Conforto's girlfriend earlier this year. I happen to be sitting next to her at a game, but it's something that, as well as he did, and yes, without his production, they would not have gotten past the Dodgers. That's true, just because those games were so close. But also without, you know, there were 8 other players that without their production, they wouldn't have gotten past the Dodgers. So I can't separate the man from the player. And the fact of the matter is, the reason I love this team so much is because I don't have to. I've gotten to know Addison Reed personally. Good dude. He regularly hangs out with, you know, his boys are, you know, Syndergaard and Travis d'Arnaud, and you know, I hear nothing but great things about them. And you know, and Noah is so funny on Twitter and just such a great engaging personality. And you know, Granderson, what a good dude. I mean, from how funny he is with the, you know, we follow Lucas Duda, to how just smiley and happy he is playing all the time, to what he's done for charity and for the anti-bullying and all of that. You know, they're, you know, Conforto seems like a guy who's just a good level-headed dude with a head on his shoulders who doesn't whine, doesn't complain. Like, the only guys that give me pause on the team, oddly enough to say this, are Harvey and Cespedes.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, Cespedes, because he's a crazy person.
in a good way. Let's be honest. I mean, he's a crazy person, but in an entertaining kind of fun kind of way.
Yes. He, you know, I don't think there's negativity toward that, you know, and
cars were a bit much, but you know
what?
The cars were a bit much, but that's fine.
The cars were a bit much, but then when everybody's talking about the cars and then him and Syndergaard coming on the horses, I mean, how funny was that? Like that's one of those things where, and you know, something that Addison said to me last year before the playoffs, this was, you know, maybe 2 weeks left in the season. It was during that Yankees series. And he said, I came over to this team and I've never seen anything like it. I've never seen a team that can just get together and decide to win a game and just have so much fun playing with each other. And, you know, people were worried when, you know, Kelly Johnson left and, you know, Uribe left because those were good clubhouse guys. But, you know, Walker's a great clubhouse guy. And so welcome Neil Walker. So, I mean, there's so much there that it's just the culture of the team is one of fun, of intelligence, of caring about human beings. And part of why I love this team so much is not just how good they are on the field, but the fact that, like, I get the sense that they're genuinely having a good time and just being good dudes.
You know, if you rewind the story back to at the end of the Jerry Manuel era and where things were, a lot of the conversation was the isolation in the clubhouse and how, I don't know, just how separated it was. And I think they really made a concerted effort when Sandy came in and he brought in Terry and he brought in this sort of more disciplined way. I think what they were trying to do is create these structures that then could follow suit of David Wright, because I really think they kind of tried to build something in the model of him. And he's a pretty, if you know him, I mean, he's a incredibly nice, but very stand up, you know, straightforward baseball kind of guy. He likes to have fun. He's very easygoing. I mean, and I think they tried to build a little bit in his model. They got Kadire to come over, kind of somebody obviously that he connects with. I think it's all really flowed from them and these pitchers. And I think a lot has to be said and a lot of credit has to go to the fact that they're all really good buddies for years, like prior to being on the Mets. DeGrom and Mats are, I mean, they're roommates. They've known each other for years. They rehab together in St. Lucie. They spend time together. So, I mean, a lot of it really predates what we're seeing. And I think that's really important. And I think you see that manifesting itself. It's sort of like this fraternity kind of a feel where they're all just kind of hanging out and they're buddies and and they're good. That's that's the other thing. It's not like they're just like fun loving, kind of having a good time guys and they're okay baseball players. They're actually really good ball players. And I think that combination really comes together. And that's where you get that synergy and that kind of fun. And it translates to us as fans, makes it so much easier to root for guys like that.
Yeah. And, you know, people are happier when they win, but the fact is, you see a story like, you know, like a Steven Matz,
right,
where not only is he a local guy, but he's still a local guy. He's not local guy makes good. Like, he still goes into the deli that has a sandwich name for him.
Mm-hmm.
And not because they have a sandwich name for him, because he likes that deli.
Yep.
You know, like,
yeah,
it feels like, and obviously, you know, you never know anyone and you can be surprised. And I'm sure Marlins fans were shocked by, you know, D. Gordon.
Sure.
But Jeremy Mejia was a guy who was just on that team and you didn't know a ton about him. And when it happened, it wasn't the biggest shock. It was a disappointment, but it wasn't the biggest shock. But the fact of the matter is, if there is, you know, a steroid charge like happened to D. Gordon, or if there is an assault charge like, you know, like with Chapman, you know, it's that sort of thing would be frankly shocking to me about 20 of the people on this roster.
Yep.
And the other five, it's just because I don't know about them enough.
You know, you mentioned an interesting point about Mejia. Again, going back to the Manuel Willie Randolph era, one of the charges against them with Omar, I think it was overrated, but people always used to comment on sort of the division from a cultural point of view. I don't know that that was so much accurate. There's probably some truth to it, but I think it was a little overblown because there's just an easy kind of a dramatic story.
That's true in every
podcast. Yeah, and that's natural. I mean, I don't think there's anything necessarily wrong with that. But what I see with this team is they do mix it up. I mean, they do have fun together and they kind of cross cultural stuff. And I think that's kind of cool too. And it's, you know, it's New York. So like, that's part of what makes New York so special. So I think it's kind of a cool thing when it kind of translates itself into the locker room and they can kind of market themselves in that way too. It's kind of fun to see everybody kind of mixing it up and getting involved in each other's stuff. And I don't know. I just think that's kind of a cool, it's a little sidebar commentary, just kind of comparing that one.
You know, who would have guessed that, you know, Cabrera coming in, you know, would with his silly little helmet after the home run thing that he does.
Right.
Like, but that kind of stuff is so much fun. I saw So in 2000, I worked for the Yankees, and
I
covered them. I was a beat writer, and yeah. I remember seeing early in the season. There was a Mariners game where the Mariners were in town, and I remember seeing all of the Mariners had the same T-shirt on underneath their uniform that was not part of their uniform, and it said, I believe it said, "We are on a mission, sir." And so obviously it's a reference to something that someone said on the team. It became a rallying cry, but I remember seeing that and seeing how they were all like excited to be a part of that. And I turned to one of the other writers and I just said, that team's going to the playoffs. And they certainly did. Just because it was so obvious that they enjoyed being a team. They enjoyed being around each other. And there are a lot of players that will make the argument of like, when you're on the field, it doesn't matter. You all have the same goal. Yeah, but at the same time, anyone who's ever played any sort of organized sports understands that you're more likely to pick each other up when you like each other.
Yes, that is the key. That is the thing you learn when you talk to guys that are out of the game. The players that are currently playing, they guard that. But when you talk to guys that are played 10, 20 years ago, they're the ones that will sort of cop to that and admit to the fact that it's trust. You know, you don't have to be each other's best friends. It's not about dinner afterwards or hanging out. It's trust. Trust that the guys are going to be in the right position, that you're on the same page, and all that stuff is built through some common bonds and that sort of stuff. But like, it's really, that's what it comes down to. And like, when you have that common goal and it's sort of out there and it's obvious, you're right. They rally around it and it builds that kind of trust. And it is important. I think that's actually something we saw with the Mets last summer, that whole week that went by that we all talked about.
Yeah.
You know, it could have gone one or two ways, but I think in some ways it galvanized them. I've talked about that in different times on this podcast where like that could have gone a bunch of different ways. But I think the fact of the matter is like it really injected itself into them and it really bonded them and it created some trust and support and some caring about how some players were feeling and what they were doing. And that all that stuff acts as glue. So when the game's on the line, you know the guy's going to back up second. You know he's got your back. You know, all that stuff matters because you can throw the curveball in this count because you know the so-and-so is going to be in the right position to pick it up. It's so complicated, and that's what makes baseball so wonderful, is there's so many little parts and pieces like that. But personality comes into play. There's no stat line for it, but there's no question it comes into play because these guys that have played the game years ago talk about it. I understand that the guys in the present don't want to acknowledge it, but these veterans always will mention it.
Well, I would argue that even more important is looking forward to going to work. And
good point.
I think
good
it's
point.
True with everyone's job. It's certainly true with mine that when you are happy about the coworkers you're surrounded by and you're happy to go to work, you perform better at your job and you are looser. And being loose and not pressing is so important. And I know that people, they're professionals, they could do. No, you saw during Cespedes' crazy slump at the end of last season and throughout the playoffs that he was swinging at pitches 2 feet out of the zone. It was utterly ridiculous, but it's because he was pressing because he wasn't loose. And so when you are loose, you are just so much better. And I think that creating that fun environment keeps you loose.
I always think of Tin Cup. The golf movie with Kevin Costner, you know,
I actually haven't seen it.
Oh, okay. He's struggling. He's having a hard time. He's all in his own head. And his caddy tells him to take the change out of his left pocket, put it in the right, you know, tie your shoes differently. He basically just shakes up his brain, loosens him up a little bit, and then he gets his game in order. It's, you know, anyway, it just reminds me of that. Again, I'm talking with Steve Hofstetter, comedian. I know him as a Mets fan. You can follow him on Twitter at Steve Hofstetter. The team's heading to the West Coast. That's your territory. You going? I know you're going to be here the next few days, but are you going? They're going to be in San Diego, LA. You going to any of the games?
My plan is to try to go to one of them. I unfortunately am traveling and working 3 of the 4 nights, so I'm hoping to at least hit one of them. But you know, I hit 5 games in spring training and 2 games the first week of the season, so I feel like I'm doing pretty well on the support front for someone who lives across the country from them. And not only that, I went to a Dodger game about 2 weeks ago, I think, and Chase Utley was in the lineup, and I made sure to flip him off every at bat, and I was only a few rows back.
Excellent.
So I feel like I already did the Lord's work, you know.
You
so I'll try to hit a game if I can. Obviously, I you know, I love it. Although it's very difficult to be a Mets fan at Dodger Stadium is not fun.
You were a Mets fan.
It's I used to, and then I went to the playoffs last year, and you know, one of the early games that I didn't go to, I was at game five, but one of the early games was when, you know, someone got, you know, concussed and brain damaged.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, you know what? It's probably not that worth it.
Yeah.
So what I did is I just quietly rooted for them. And there was a Mets fan in the row behind me. And like when something good would happen, I would just kind of, you know, throw my hand back, give him a quick little pound.
Nice.
But when the Mets won and the Dodgers fans were streaming out of the stadium and they were cursing at the Dodgers, there's this team sucks. I hate these guys. I wasn't wearing any gear. So I just joined right in, and I was just, as a Mets fan, I was going, yeah, Dodgers suck, I hate this team. And just other guys like Dodger fans were being like, yeah. And it was just, that was an funny. Awful lot of fun.
Well done. You have a baseball podcast, which I might add you haven't asked me to be a guest on yet, hint hint, but tell
I
me
have
what...
not had any journalists
I
as guests yet.
But I'm not a journalist, I'm a Mets fan, come on.
Well, yeah, but the I can't make it too Mets heavy. They
no,
know
I know, I know.
You know, I had Barry Lyons on, but they
fair enough.
Only non-baseball player I've had so far was David Sampson, who's the president of the Marlins.
Yeah, that's also, well, I don't know if you're a Survivor fan, but he was on Survivor a few years ago. It was quite interesting.
He was. We talked about it, and
yeah.
We talked about how him bringing a blazer was perhaps the dumbest move in the show's history.
Yeah, absolutely. Played into the stereotype. But so tell my listeners about Major League Podcast and what you're up to with that show.
So Major League Podcast is so much fun. It is basically, I get to ask irreverent questions to baseball players. And we've had, you know, we've had some really big names on, you know, Bob Boone and Rick Cerrone and Mark Gubiza and Gary Matthews and, you know, folks like that. And then we've also had people like John Ratliff, who pitched one inning in the majors and it was a perfect inning, and he was on a roster for 45 days and
yep.
They never let him pitch again.
Great.
And so, you know, it's a real range of stories. And what we say is it's about the person, not about the personnel. Like, I don't care if it was a curveball in the eighth inning. I don't care. I don't need that detail. What I care about is where were you when you were drafted and what was that like? You know, I asked CJ Nikowski, how did it feel to be traded for a player to be named later? Like, we, you know, I talked to Jim Gosker, who was, you know, a longtime utility player, and it came out that he, you know, through the course of the interview, I kind of discovered that the reason he played was because his dad wanted him to, and it was more his dad than him. And he told me this heartbreaking story about how his father's last words, his dying words, were, Jimmy remembered to hit the fastball. And so it's about people. It's a human interest podcast about baseball players.
Excellent. I made a tweet the other night. Admittedly, I it was late. Probably had a few too many beers in me, but I said Michael Conforto was better than Bryce Harper. It's probably a little premature, but I think it could actually be true one day. What do you? Yeah, am I crazy,
or do you
think that's possible?
I don't. I think Conforto is wonderful.
Yeah.
I actually, before this season, I saw him as a 280, 30 home run guy.
Wow.
And I've, you know, said that on the air a decent amount. I'm starting to see that maybe I'm underestimating a little bit. You know, maybe he's a 290, 35 home run guy. But I still don't think he's a 310, 45 home run guy, which is what Bryce Harper is. I think Conforto is going to become a dominant player. He is going to become a staple of this team.
It's an all-star.
And he is going, oh, absolute all-star. Maybe even this year. But I think he will become a perennial all-star. I think he will be someone that Kansas City fans, after Kansas City fans are done voting for all Royals a billion times and they go over to the National League, he'll be someone who just by default will be like, yeah, well, of course, Conforto and who else? Like, I think he'll become that good. But that said, Bryce Harper is otherworldly.
Yeah, I know.
And I have no problem admitting that.
I know. I was ahead of myself. I was looking at that first 70, 80 games of their career, and like Conforto's actually playing better. But yes, I know. I was a little premature, but I do think he's awesome. I mean, I love watching that swing from the first time I saw him in spring training a year ago. I mean, it was like, wow, this is like Mattingly. Like that's what he looks like in the box. And, you know, that's only continued to get better. So, I mean, I'm super excited for him. And like you said earlier, he's a really nice kid, got a really strong head on his shoulders. You know, obviously his parents instilled that in him. And I'm really eager to see sort of how he evolves, you know, through the course of this. So the team's heading out on an 11-day, 3-city road trip. We mentioned through San Diego, L.A., then Colorado. Who knows how things go there? It's always an adventure, but... it's 11 games. They're 17-9 as the timer recording this. What do you think is a realistic trip? What are you sort of expecting out of those 11 games, you know, wins and losses?
Well, the Padres and the Rockies are not teams I'm afraid of.
Nah. And the Dodgers are kind of half and half at this point.
Yeah, right. The Dodgers were a team I was afraid of, and then I watched the Marlins sweep them.
Yep.
I think that realistically... I'd say best case scenario, they're coming out of this 11-game trip 8-3. I think worst case scenario, they're coming out of it 6-5, and it'll be somewhere in between. You know, those are the, we'll figure out what happens with those other couple games.
So 7 wins, it'd be 20, my math's going to be off, but like 23-13, let's say, going into that series with the Nationals. To me, that's when the season, you know, that's it. The lights go on. Now it's time to rock. Really excited for those games. I don't want to get ahead of myself because obviously 11 games out west is a tricky thing.
A good amount of games.
Yeah, super excited for these May games against the Nationals. That's going to be terrific.
Yeah, you don't know what the Nationals are going to do. It's actually kind of odd because I've become friendly with a good amount of the Nationals staff. Because
how's that?
So. Well, I was introduced to Dusty Baker about a project. This is before they hired him. And Dusty then, in turn, introduced me to Chris Spire, Bob Boone, and Jock Jones. Now, Boone is the one who hired Dusty. And then Dusty turned around and hired Chris and Jock. Because they were all kind of, you know, close and had worked together a bunch. And so it was one of these things where suddenly I turn around and half the coaching staff of the Nationals I'm friendly with. And it's, you know, I told Dusty, when he got the job, I sent him a little congratulatory gift basket, and, you know, he had been very good to me and, you know, introduced me to some great people. And so I sent him a congratulatory gift basket and I said, I'm really pulling for you guys to win the wild card. But as much as I like you, I'm sorry, I am a Mets fan and that's I will awesome. Remain a Mets.
That's great. Now, see, I love to hear, okay, that's great. And I have to give you credit for that because, like, I'm in those positions a lot too, you know? So like, and I try not to shy away from the fact that like, I'm a Mets fan and like, this is the deal. And what's funny to me is that people totally respect that because it's baseball, you know, and they completely get it. Is that the sort of impression you get?
Yeah. I think most of them think it's really funny.
Yeah.
Right. You know, and not just baseball, but I think sports in general, because also these guys, for the most part, it's a job. Even the guys who are lifers, you know, even right. the David Wrights. Yeah, it would be crazy if David Wright ended up at the last 2 years of his career, you know, playing for the Braves.
Oh, yeah.
None of us would be able to handle it, but he would.
No. I don't even know if he would. I think you picked the wrong guy. Honestly, Joe, the one person, I think he's the one that wouldn't. But I get you. I hear you.
No, I honestly think, and that's why I picked. I honestly think it would be fine. Like the same way that. So and now I don't want that happening. And God forbid, and I'm sorry to put that into the universe, but I was throwing out a first pitch in Columbus earlier this year, and one of the other people throwing it out was Joshua Perry from the Buckeyes, and, you know, it's just before the NFL draft, it's pretty clear he's going to get drafted, and, you know, so I'm talking to him beforehand, and then we end up, you know, following each other on Twitter or whatever, and I say to him, I go, hey, I really wish you luck in the draft, unless anyone but the Giants draft you, and then you're dead to me. And, you know, and he thought it was funny because he was like, yeah, totally get that.
That's you know where that comes through, actually, when you talk to these guys about fantasy sports, like other sports, like a lot of these baseball players play fantasy football. Mm-hmm. So like when you talk about it in that context, you kind of get a window into that you know, the way that how fluid that perception is, which is always kind of funny to me. But listen, man, I appreciate it. Thanks for the time. Again, if you want to catch Steve's podcast, it's at Major League Podcast. You can search it on iTunes. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter by searching his name. Steve, thanks for hopping on with me. I appreciate it. It's always great to catch up with you.
Can I tell you one more thing real quick?
Yeah, go ahead.
The Dodgers did not let me throw out a first pitch because I was too big of a Mets fan.
Ah, that's great.
Which is my crowning achievement as a Mets fan.
I was going to say, you know,
we'd love to have you at a game.
Yes.
You're not coming close to the field.
Totally take pride in that. Absolutely. That's great.
I'm pretty happy about that one.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. We'll talk again soon. That's great.
All right, take care.
Again, that was comedian and Mets fan Steve Hofstetter, who'll be at the Greenwich Village Comedy Club and Broadway Comedy Club on May 6th and 7th, which you can learn more about at his website, stevehofstetter.com. Thanks again for listening to the Mets Blog Q&A cast presented by Citi. Hey, did you know this year at Citi Field, you can use your Citi card and get $2 off a Pat LaFrieda's original filet mignon sandwich all season long? I'm laughing because I'm starving and that sounds awesome. To learn more about other great Citi card member perks, go to Mets.com/Citi. Thanks again for listening. I'll be back with another Q&A next week. Have a great weekend, everyone. And as always, let's go Mets.
This has been the Mets Blog Q&A cast, presented by Citi, part of the SNY.TV audio network.